So our next speaker is Luigi Apache. I hope I pronounced your name right, Luigi.
Yes, it's right.
Yeah. And in fact, it was one of Luigi's papers that she published when she was here in Paris, looking at T-cell memory epigenetic states that could be involved in memory states. And so this was something that I find, you know, was one of those questions that have been out there for many, many, many years. And when she was in Sebastian Amigo-Aena's lab, she was the one who really sort of put her finger on it. And so I think this is very interesting to think about to what extent cells, well, the immune system retains memory through epigenetic mechanisms, actually. So since her postdoc, Luigia actually moved to Italy and set up her own group in Turin at the IIGM. And she's been running her own group for the last 3 years. And so really looking forward to hearing what you've been up to, Luigia. Thank you so much.
So thanks a lot, Edith, for the introduction, for the invitation. So we'll switch a little bit because actually I'm an immunologist, so I will speak mostly about lymphocytes. But it's true that I found really fascinated in the last, 5 years, the epigenetics of the immune cells. So we are talking about the immune cells, and especially for the adaptive immune response mediated by T, B lymphocytes. So usually what's happening at the beginning, when the cells recognize the antigen, so the cells start to, what they are doing actually. So they integrate multiple signal. First the signal, of course, is the TCR, is the recognition of the peptide of the antigen, but then they need also to integrate multiple signal derived by the co-positive and negative co-stimulatory molecules. And in fact, all this kind of information need to be brought inside the nucleus, and then in the nucleus, the cells switch from a quiescent state to an active state, a lot of genes get activated. And what is very fascinating in immunology is that when you have this kind of transition, a lot of genes have been found to be related to the specificity, mostly related to the TCR, the specificity of the immune response. If the activation is a good one, the cells will differentiate in memory cells because, in fact, the immunological memory is a specific feature of the lymphocyte. Not all the cells are committed to become memory cells. And, of course, another important aspect is that the lymphocyte is still able to maintain a kind of adaptability and plasticity, meaning that through these kind of properties, they can travel in the blood, they can reach tissue, going back and forward from the bone marrow, lymph node, and spleen. And of course, this is very, so here I summarize a lot of immunological concept, but of course, one important parameter is missing, and this one is the time. So if you are talking, for example, the activation of T lymphocyte, for example, the branch of the cytotoxic T cells, CD8 positive cells, and we are looking for the immune responses against acute infection, for example, flu, we can distinguish at least two main phases. The first one in which the cells recognize the antigen, they start to expand and differentiate. This is quite nice because at each cell cycle, they will acquire specific transcription programs. And then they will reach the so-called peak of the immune response. So it's a very fast process. So a few hundred cells can give rise to 1 million of lymphocytes. And usually this process lasts between 1 and 2 weeks. So at the peak of the immune response, most of the cells are represented by the effector cells. Effector cells are responsible for the pathogen clearance. And once the pathogen is removed, and so we are safe, what's happened is that these effector lymphocytes are committed to die. So until now, it was not really clear how these cells are committed to die, but it's quite an interesting process because it's lasting between 1 and 2 days. So in the second phase, what's happening is that if the priming was a good one, for example, in the course of infection, so very few cells are able to persist in the host, and these are the so-called memory T cell subset. The cells are able to persist in the host even for 100 years, as we know, but although they represent a very important weapon of our body, we don't really know what are the mechanisms behind the immunological memory. And here comes the idea that maybe the immunological memory in some way overlaps with the epigenetic memories, so a kind of inheritance of a specific information. So Of course, as I mentioned at the beginning, we start to be interested in the chromatin organization in our lymphocytes, and as for all the other cell types, even in the lymphocyte, of course, the chromatin structure dictates the expression profile of our cells. So we have the U and the heterochromatin. The heterochromatin, we know that is the compacted fraction of the nucleus, usually silenced. And what is interesting in the lymphocyte is that 60% of the nucleus is compacted in heterochromatin. And once the cells get activated, actually, this percentage twists to the 40, but it's still a lot as compared to YES or other cell types. So all the time we are talking about activation and differentiation of lymphocytes. We are talking about, in fact, a different gene expression profile, but also to different epigenetic landscape. And so if you are talking about cancer, you see the cells start to differentiate in so-called T-exhausted progenitors, quite plastic. And then if the persistence of the antigen is long, like in cancer or chronic infection, the cells proliferate and differentiate in the so-called exhausted lymphocyte. Usually cells very full functional capabilities, but they have a very interesting picture because they are dysfunctional, but they are still there and they are surviving. Actually, quite a lot of exhausted cells in the tissue, so this is quite a different feature as compared to other systems. Of course, during the process, the cells lose plasticity, the chromatin gets compacted, and the immune phenotype is related to a so-called stable epigenetic landscape. Actually, we don't really know what does it mean. We only know that if you play with the checkpoint inhibitors, in fact, it's not possible to revert and to reprogram these cells. In acute infection, conversely, is in the middle of this picture, is different because the cells here, they go through a specific process of differentiation. We have the naive, highly plastic, and then differentiated so-called stem cell-like cells, and then central memory, effector memory, T effectors, terminally differentiated effectors. And step by step, so they lose plasticity and stemness, but they will acquire a lot of cytotoxic molecule. So these are the so-called effector lymphocytes. These cells are committed to die. In other systems, autoimmunity, conversely, is the opposite, because in this situation, you have cells that are, they attack the self-antigen, and here you have bipotent cells expressing both stemness and memory genes, even cytotoxic molecule. And this is quite bad, because these cells maintain a long persistence. So in all this context, of course, different transcriptional program drive and the differentiation of our cells. But behind all these kind of forces, of course, we have different kind of epigenetic landscape. And in few words, it means different epigenetic factors. And in the last years came clear important the role of heterochromatin during the differentiation of the lymphocytes. Because in fact, the different, players of the heterochromatin organization and compactation are playing a so-called redundant, in bracket, role during the silencing of stemness and of the memory genes. And in fact, both the H3K9 tramethylation, so the tramethylation, polycomb repressing complex with the K27, and the demethylation mediated by the NMT3A are all three responsible for the epigenetic silencing of stemness and memory genes. At the moment, it's nice to talk about that in this here, because so all the immunology talk about this pathway. So we say that it's redundant. I'm not quite sure that the redundant is the mechanism. So we don't know exactly what is the major role of one of another one, for example. Of course, for me, it depends on the stage of differentiation and maybe even the context of analysis, for example, different kind of infections. So we became interested in the last few years in this SUVAR heterochromatin complex responsible for the T9 tramethylation. This is a quite powerful histomethyl transferase. It was the first one to be described, you all know, and it's quite important for the generation of so-called heterochromatin through the recruitment of the heterochromatin factor HP1. And we found quite interesting this complex, not only because it was quite analyzed and studied in Institute Curie at the time when I was there as a postdoc, but also because conceptually the concept of heterochromatin spreading is really fitting very well with the concept of immune response against specific stimuli. So in this picture, for example, I'm just giving you a flower of what means heterochromatin organization in the nucleus of the lymphocytes. So when here you have just a very simple situation where the cells get activated by the antigen. So this is quite this is important features that was mentioned at the beginning. So the cells exit, so after the antigenic stimulation, exit from the quiescence. And the first things is the first, really the first, I think even before the master regulator, is an important chromatin organization. You see there is an increase in the size of the nucleus, and another important features that we found, there's an important enrichment in H3K9 trimethylation at the constitutive heterochromatin at the chromocenters. So what I would like to discuss with you today is the story about the heterochromatin during the T-cell fate decision programming in the context of infection, and then also to look for what's happening in the context of cancer, so just by comparing acute versus chronic immune response to cancer, and then to see how positive and negative stimuli are integrated in terms of chromatin dynamics and T-cell fate decision. So to address the question of the SUVAR, what we had done was just to take mice that were characterized something like 20 years ago by Thomas Yenwine, so mice knockout for the SUVAR SNNH1. This is also one important features of the immune cells. So SUVAR SNNH2 is not expressed and is not able to compensate for the immune phenotype I'm showing you here in a few slides. So the experiment I decided to do was very simple. I made because it was my postdoc, this one. So we take the mice to infect with Listeria. Listeria is a very simple bacteria used in the lab and is mimicking viral infection. So the experiment was very easy. So it was to infect the first time with the bacteria with a very low dose, and then you challenge the mice with a second dose, very high dose. So if the mouse has a good immune response, the bacteria should be killed and the mouse should be healthy. But this was not the case when we're analyzing the SUVAR SNNH1 knockout mice. You see, while here you are counting the bacteria in the liver of the mice, so while the wild-type mice were almost protected, we found a lot of colonies, a lot of bugs in the knockout mice. And this, in fact, was related to an impairment of CD8 cell differentiation. You see, the number of antigen-specific cells was reduced in the knockout as compared to the wild-type. So SUVAR has been described to be an important epigenetic rider responsible for the epigenetic silencing, was important to look for the gene expression profile of our cells. And so we decided to put in comparison so we sorted antigen-specific cells at the peak of the immune response, and we put in comparison with the gene expression profile of naive cells, so the time zero and the peak of the immune response. And so here, what we found was even something interesting. You see, when the cells get activated in the wild-type situation, you have always a balance of genes that get activated and repressed. But when we were comparing the number of repressed genes, we found something like 600 genes that were impaired in silencing in the knockout mouse. And with the gene ontology analysis, GCA, we found that most of these genes were related to stemness and memory. Of course, then we look also for the histone code. We found an important enrichment in H3K9 trimethylation highlands on top of the gene body, let's say, of even intergenic regions, so to be really precise here, for these genes related to stemness and memory in the T lymphocytes. So it was very nice anti-correlation between the silencing and the enrichment in the repressive marker. It was not the case in the knockout cells. The observation then was also supported by single-cell transcriptomic analysis. This was done really in 2018, was with the text genomics at the time. And what we found here is that when we compare, so the experimental design is always the same, when we were comparing the naive cells in purple versus the antigen-specific cells in the green, so we could see, by comparing wild-type and knockout mice, while there was a little increase in T memory precursor cells, there was an important decrease in the effect or lymphocytes. And by looking specifically at the number of effector and memory genes expressed in each individual cells, so what we found was, of course, in the naive cells, that is our control, we didn't see so high number of memory and effector genes. But when the cells, then thanks to the single cell resolution, we could identify the cycling subset. Here, there were two different populations. One was particularly rich in both effector and memory genes, but we didn't see differences between wild-type and knockout mice. Of course, in the memory cells, you have both signature upregulated, so expressed, because here we are just counting the number of genes. But when we look for the effectors lymphocyte, there was a specific silencing of stemness and memory genes in the wild type, but was not the case in the see, okay, it's much easier in the knockout mice. So these results was clearly shown there was a specific impairment in epigenetic silencing of stemness and memory genes in the effectors. So this is quite interesting because epigenetics in this situation is used to silence the signature and so to drive the terminal differentiation and the death of the effectors. So the paper ended up with this working model where we proposed that once the cells be targeted by the antigen, both the cells enter in a so-called bipotent cycling intermediate states. Actually, this is adopted from the epigenetic field, this kind of definition. So these cells are characterized by the expression of both stemness and effector genes. Now, while very few cells will enter in quiescence, generating memory cells, other cells will continue to proliferate through the so-called clonal expansion. They're able to proliferate even every 4 hours, this lymphocyte. And during the clonal expansion, the Suvara complex will be responsible for the establishment of an epigenetic barrier. And by doing that, will impede, will interfere with the possible reprogramming of the effectors in cycling subset. So it, in fact, is blocking the differentiation of the cells. So the effectors in this situation will just die. They will die in the acute infection. So now, if we are exposed to the antigen, what's happening is that now the memory cells will re-enter in this cycling bipotent intermediate state and will recapitulate what I'm just saying 1 minute ago. Of course, this concept is very important in the field of immunology, because now if you're talking about cancer, so we all know that in cancer, exhausted cells are not able to fight because they're dysfunctional. Checkpoint inhibitors are just able to release a little bit the effector function, but this kind of phenotype is quite, so because of the epigenetic stability, the cells are not really able to reject completely the tumor. But the concept of the epigenetics, the concept of the possibility of really interfere with this heterochromatin organization, of course, offer the possibility to new way to interfere with this with the exhausted condition. So, but to address the question of exhaustion, of course, it is also very important to look for the heterogeneity and the immune phenotype of our cells in the context of cancer. And of course, I started to work here in single cell transcriptomic, but then we did a lot of other job in Italy. One major limitation in single-cell transcriptomic is represented by the inability to sort out the cells. You know, the key technology in immunology is really to use the flow cytometry to sort out the cells and then to do a lot of ad hoc transfer. So, and this is why I decided together with my team to put a lot of effort in new single cell technology where we are combining the protein surface marker expression with the gene expression profile. So how we are doing that? We are using antibodies that are labeled with the barcode. So instead of to use the classical antibodies bound to fluorochrome, usually used in flow cytometry, we are using exactly the same clone. It's also is important for the sorting. So the antibody are bound to this barcode, the cells are labeled. Then we trap the cells inside the microwells and we lyse the cells and at the same time we trap on the top of individual beads the surface marker labeled with the of course with the AB oligo and the RNA. In this way, we can really detect much higher number of immune subset. So here, just to give you the flower, so you see in this experiment, so what we did here is to analyze a tumor mouse model, is a late stage, is a MC38, but just is the same in other, for example, in B16, just a model for discussion. So it's a late stage, and we isolate lymphocyte from the tumor draining lymph node and from the tumor. And here you have what you obtain in the RNA, so the cluster that we obtained by just using the RNA expression profile. Here what we got just combining 37 different AB oligo. But of course, then if you combine both kind of technology, you could get a very nice resolution. So here you see look like a nice butterfly. So on the orange part of the wings of the butterfly, we have the lymphocyte belonging to the lymph nodes. And in the middle, you have all the cells belonging to the tumor. So one important observation is that usually you don't have so much overlap between lymphocyte So in the lymphocyte belonging to tumor and lymph node. So this actually is suggesting that maybe the fate specification and fate determination are occurring maybe in different places. Of course, this is different if you are talking about infection, but in cancer, this really matters. Of course, then we were able to identify different kind of subset. So just really to give you a flower. So of course, in the lymph node, most of the subset represented by memory, naive and memory subtypes, whereas in the lymph node, we could detect early activated lymphocyte, two different subset of tissue resident memory, and then the exhausted cells and a big population of cycling exhausted cells. So you see here, so this slide, I decided to introduce this slide just to say that unfortunately, if you change the system, especially the immune model, the system is completely different. Now we found a lot of cycling lymphocyte in the late stage of differentiation. Usually these cells are rich in a lot of clonotypes. So we didn't find these bipotent intermediates, but possible to find them if now you interfere, for example, with vaccination, especially in, combined with immunotherapy. So, but this is, you know, although we are working a lot on that, this is quite a difficult scenario because, you know, this is late stage of tumor. The cells are quite a lot differentiated. You have a lot of clonotypes. I think it was very important, conversely, to focus on the early events of differentiation of the cells because usually they are much more plastic. And here comes the second question of our study. So what's happening at the early beginning of the immune response when the cells receive the antigenic stimulation? So I was just telling you, in the exhausted state, in fact, the cells are less plastic. They express a lot of checkpoint inhibitors. It's quite difficult to reprogram them. So, but what is really happening here, we don't really know. Especially, we don't know if positive and negative signal can be integrated in a kind of immunological memory. Why not? This is quite an important question, I think, because usually, especially when you are talking about when you have the antigen available only for a very short time of window, you know, the lymphocyte need to remember the encounter with the antigen for all along their life. So we decide to integrate the information and of the activation mediated by the antigen by also looking for the negative signal mediated by PD-1 and by the PD-L1 that actually is the ligand expressed by the antigen-presenting cells. So we all know that PD-1 is, you know, the receptor, one of the best immune checkpoint receptor that actually by which if you are going through blockade, you can potentiate immunotherapy and activate lymphocyte against the cancer. So, but here, conversely to the other system, you're just looking at the early beginning. So PD-L1 expressed on the antigen-presenting cells. PD-1 is an activated gene. So naive cells do not express PD-1. It's just activated once they receive the antigenic stimuli. So this how we design the experiment. So we have mice, everything usually is done in vivo, because at least for lymphocytes, it's the best way to look for differentiation. So we take antigen-presenting cells, so we put on the top of the antigen-presenting cell of the MHC peptide, so the ligand, that can be very weak or very strong, so we play with this kind of signal, and then we use the antigen-presenting cell, wild type or knockout, for the ligand or PD-L1. So the antigen presents and injected in the footpad. They have the capability to migrate to reach the draining lymph node. They reach this lymph node, and then we can look for the activation of antigen-specific cells for the ligand. The cells are the OT1. So now, if you just use high and low affinity ligands, so what we found just a few hours after the activation, you see, just 3 hours, between 3 or 6 hours, so this is an aura between 12 and 16, or after 23, and 26 hours. So what's happening here is that different way your genes get activated. And it's nice to see that according to the strength of the signal, we have a different behavior. You see, a lot of genes activated after 12 hours if we have a strong signal. If the signal delivered by the antigen is very weak, you have an accumulation of a serial activation of genes. You know, and then if you compare the number of genes activated, not doing the analysis against the naive condition, but in transition between each phase, also in this situation you can see you have a peak in the second phase for the high affinity, but not for the low affinity. Of course, we found a lot of genes, a lot of pathway, and related to metabolism, to migration, chemokine, inflammatory pathways, and a lot of differences, of course, between the high and the low affinity ligands. But we're also interested by the fact that although the cells are just before the first cell cycle, I forgot to say, so we are working in the first, you know, in the first cells, because the lymphocyte requires 36 hours to enter in cell cycle. So although they do not proliferate, a lot of memory and effector genes are already activated. These genes are not expressed, they are just activated. So there's a mild activation. So the cells start in some way maybe to open the chromatin and to let a little bit to transcribe these genes. So we did the gene ontology. So here was GCA, and we found that in fact the first signature, the first enrichment was to find a lot of memory genes activated with the, both with the high and the low affinity ligands. And then in phase two or in phase three, meaning a later time point for the weak signal, we also found the effector genes. So stemness and memory genes, as well as effectors, are activated before the first cell cycle. So lymphocytes, in some way, before to give rise to the progeny, they already know a little bit maybe what they will do next. Of course, we also look for checkpoint inhibitors. And here in the big wig, you see you have the best checkpoint used in immunotherapy. All of them get activated quickly after 6 hours. And according to the strength of the signal, you have a kind of different behavior. You see CTLF4 is activated in both situations independently of the TCR signal. This is the weak one. PD-1, there is a modulation. LAG-3 is even very nice because LAG-3, you see, is just activated by the high affinity, not by the low affinity. And here you have as a control one of the best activation marker used by the immunologist. Of course, then we validated also the expression of this marker by flow cytometry. So what's the role of PD-1? Why was there? What is doing? So we used and we did, again, RNA-seq analysis of this lymphocyte activated in vivo after 12 hours. So we are in the phase two, the so-called phase two in immunology. And then we look for the number of differentially expressed genes in the different conditions. So the stroke signal, wild type and knockout EC, weak signal. So here we're just counting the number of differentially expressed. So the, we are looking for the differentially expressed genes upregulated or downregulated in common between the different conditions. So you see there are very few genes in common when we compare the high affinity as compared to the low affinity. But if now we use the PD-L1 knockout and dendritic cells with a weak signal, now we have an increase in the number of upregulated genes. And it's the same if we now look for the downregulated genes. So we did gene ontology analysis, of course, and so we look also for the gene expression profile and a lot of features. I have to say we didn't see so many genes. You see here the percentage are between the 65 and the 75. We didn't see so much differences in the fold changes in the RNA expression profile, but we found a lot of pathway gene ontologies related to epigenetics. For example, a lot of genes related to epigenetic silencing. We found SUBAR, H1, for example, activated in the low affinity condition, SEDB1, TRIM28, a lot of acetyltransferases. Genes related to this pathway, of course, the K4 tramethylation pathway, positive regulator of chromatin binding, and of course, even regulators of heterochromatin. So this is just suggesting that one of the most important signatures that under the control of this negative signal is epigenetics factors. Of course, everything that's been analyzed here is compared to the naive condition, so the difference I'm showing you here. So, but was not only important to look for, of course, the differences in RNA transcription profile. The hypothesis is also that maybe chromatin is changing already before the first cell cycle. And so we decide to do ATA-seq at the same time point. So it's exactly the same experimental design. So isolate the lymphocyte after 12 hours, and then we done ATA-seq. So here this heat map, each individual condition is compared to the zero, so the naive condition. So, and you here, we underline the different, the open region, specifically rich in a wild-type condition and four in the weak condition, This was quite interesting because when we used a strong signal to in the absence of PD-L1, we found a lot of open loci as compared to the other condition. This is quite important, interesting in immunology because it means that as everything is normalized over the naive condition, it means that the TCR is inducing important opening the chromatin, and then negative in molecules are keeping under control this pathway. And then, of course, we have also a specific loci rich for the low affinity PD-L1 knockout condition. So for these regions, we look also for the enrichment with GRAIT in gene ontology, and was interesting to see that we found, of course, a lot of genes related to inflammation, to tumor necrosis factor is one of the best inflammatory molecules in the immune system. We found also pathway related to increased in CD8 cell memory T cell number, and then, of course, linked to the gene expression profile, of course, we also found open chromatin, ADN, acetyltransferases, enzyme, and adaptor molecules. For the low affinity ligand, was also nice to see that there is a specific enrichment of this peak in the genes involving the regulation of stemness. So the RNA-seq analysis and the ATAC-seq analysis are suggesting that maybe something is occurring at the level of this pathway driving the activation, because we are talking about acetyltransferase activity, and also in some way to the memory differentiation as suggested by the maintenance of stemness and also by the increase in cell number. So this is why now we need to go back to immunology and to look if now this is the case. So instead of to sacrifice the mice after a few hours, we decide to wait 1 or 2 months and then to look for the number of antigen-specific cells in different compartments. So here you see, of course, if the signal is very strong, you have much more antigen-specific cells. Here we are playing with cognizogenic marker to capture by flow cytometry this OT1, the antigen-specific cells, you see? And of course, you have less cells if the signal of priming was a weak one. But then if the cells were primed by the low affinity ligands, now you have an increase in the percentage and also number of antigen-specific cells. So this is the case for both high and low affinity ligands. And you see this is the case, and we found differences in the spleen, liver, and even in the bone marrow. But the memory cells are not a unique population. There's a lot of heterogeneity. So we look for the specific differentiation profile of the cells, and by combining several immunological markers, we could see a nice increase of this population here, characterized by CD44, for example, downregulation CT612. You know, the combination of these several markers let you to define the so-called T-effector lymphocyte. The cells are traveling in the blood and usually are considered the first barrier of the immunological memory against pathogen mostly. And so here is the flow cytometry, here is the quantification. For example, we see in the liver there's a specific increase in the number of T effector memories, especially with a low affinity condition, because of course this is important when the TCR signal is very weak. So what's the relevance? So in this time, after 1 month, we implant a tumor in these mice, and once we look for the tumor growth, so we observed, especially with a low affinity ligand, in fact, you know, the OT1 primate with the low affinity ligand were not able to keep in control the tumor growth. You see, when you compare this situation to the control, that actually just mice were injected the mice, the tumor, but then there was a good control when the cells have been primed in the absence of PD-1, PD-L1 signal. So here I'm showing you the blockade by anti-PD-1, but of course we made also the genetic experiment. So here comes the conclusion. So what I show you with you today is that, first of all, the concept that the SUVAR and the aerochromatin play a very important role for the epigenetic silencing of stemness and memory genes during the late differentiation of effectors. So we found bipotent cyclin intermediating infection, clearly important because they have both stemness and effector properties. In normal condition, in cancer, conversely, these cells are characterized mostly by effector dysfunctional features. I have to say, it's difficult to find them, but working with immunotherapy or vaccination is possible to enrich for this kind of subset. So we didn't see so much overlap between the immune profile of lymphocytes belonging to the lymphoid tumors, and this suggests maybe, in at least in this context, the phase determination and the phase specification are occurring in two different places. This is very important in immunology because, as in epigenetics, we're always discussing about stages of differentiation, what is stable and what is unstable during the immune differentiation. Then another concept is that memory and effector lineage differentiation program are established very, very early before the first cell cycle, and at least for the memory genes, this seems to be independent from the strength of the TCR signal. But not only the TCR signal is very important, it's also important, you know, all the environment, even the negative checkpoints can play a role in curtailing and modulating the not only late stage differentiation of memory, but even the quality of the memory cells. This is my conclusion. So I would like to acknowledge all the people working in my lab, especially Nadia Brasu, Carlo Dentinis, and Valentina Russo. They made the job of the second part. I would also like to acknowledge that especially the Suvar story has been done at Institut Curie in the lab of Sebastian Amigorena, working a lot with Adeline Cross, Christelle Goudot, and was also a project carried out in collaboration with Genevieve Valmuzzi. So I would like also to thank the founders and all of you for your attention. Thank you.